James, what you should do for the rest of the podcast is ask the exact same question 10 different ways. And then say after the podcast is over that you won the question. That's the equivalent of that fucking cunt, Virgil Texas. I'm sorry, I have none of the time for that prick.
Is Virgil Texas the one that's also like a mixed martial artist, a gamer, and a bodybuilder?
I don't know.
So like one of them on Chapo is like, I went to like a live recording of Chapo a few months ago. And like one of them is like fucking beautiful, like really like incredibly good looking, and is like in really good shape. And I swear they're also like a semi-professional MMA fighter and gamer. And I can't remember if it's Virgil. It's not Will Menaker. It's not what without meaning to be rude. One of them looks like the kind of person you think would be on Chapel Trap House. So one of them looks like in a basement.
Will, I'm looking at it now, the photo of them. And it's definitely the guy who looks like Harry Potter.
Oh, right. Okay. So, like, he's like the New York kind of cool one. Like, just like a super hipster kind of like.
Yeah, he's fucking out. And
all that kind of shit. So, yeah, it's not the one that's like a disproportionately beautiful mixed martial artist.
Virgil Texas.
Virgil Texas.
That sounds like a porn name.
Yeah.
Or a wrestler's name. It could be a wrestler or a porn.
I'm Virgil Texas.
I'm coming to a stadium near you, Virgil Texas. Yeah.
Was that, again, was that wrestler or porn star?
You can make your own mind up on that. I'm coming in a stadium near you. This could be a porn thing, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, good to go.
We are basically.
Hang on. My Discord is open in the background, and it is being difficult letting me. It's making noises.
Are you trying to pretend you're cool to us?
Oh yeah, because having a Discord is cool.
Yeah, well, exactly right. But like, that's the that's the thing. Like, some people who aren't cool would think was cool.
Excuse me, let me just close my Discord. Oh my god, they're going to think that I'm such a player.
I don't know what Discord is.
For the gamers. Oh my god, Alex.
I don't play games. Like, I don't. So,
Alex doesn't play games. He's famous straight talking when he'd say,
I've always been very kind of upfront with ladies, and I don't play it.
So dating profile,
exactly, yeah, which was mothballed for many, many reasons.
The best dating profile I ever saw was one guy advertised that he had both Amazon Prime and Netflix.
So, welcome to the Anime Podcast. This week, we're going to be discussing, broadly speaking, the American election, but more kind of focusing on the idea of non-participation or withholding of votes, either from an anarchist perspective or in a kind of tanky slash social democrat perspective. With us this week is James, who has the lovely handle Fake Trump, because that guy got a dunk-a-dunk or badunk-a-dunk.
How you doing, folks? Any goss this week?
Maybe. We'll hear from Will. Will, do you have any gossip? You
don't have any. I think I have like literally zero gossip because it's half term for me at the moment. I've kind of just been like applying for jobs, which I eventually got a job. And then like I was elated for about 5 minutes thinking, oh, wow, I got a job. And then I was like, went immediately back into despair mode and thought, oh, shit, I've got a job. I've got too much to do again, like almost immediately. So I've got like no gossip. I don't know. There was that guy, like someone said something on Twitter that was really inflammatory about, I want to say, people who needs free school meals. Some Tory somewhere said, like, if you give kids free school meals, that's basically the same as funding people's crack habits. And that's the only gossip I've got. And it's not really gossip.
Ben Bradshaw said
that. Ben Bradshaw, that was it. Thank you.
I have a bit of gossip, but it's about you, Will, which is that for our listeners, you may not know, and I'm not going to reveal too much about Will's background, but you can probably guess he's Scottish.
And I'm not a cop.
And he is a cop, yeah. But he's probably the most Presbyterian person I ever met. I lived in Edinburgh, which was the fucking, the burial ground of the Covenanters? It's like someone like grabbed a rib bone from the Covenanters' graves, reanimated it, and somehow made it more anxious. And that's you, Will.
I'm like, okay, so like I'm what, like a dead zombie Presbyterian with increased anxiety levels.
Seems appropriate.
Again, if I were single, that could be my dating profile.
From all the Red Bull that you drink, that's why you're so anxious.
Oh yeah, like I mean, you've got to like be constantly on edge. Red Bull gives you anxiety. Red Bull gives you palpitations.
I feel like there should be like a Scottish specific ad for Red Bull, in which like they smuggle Red Bull into the Covenanter's prison, and so they all like one of them drinks it and flies out of the Covenanter's prison, but then it gets shot down by Cromwellian cannon. Seems only appropriate. Anyway.
A joke that only about five people listening to is going to get, and three of them are on the podcast.
It's true. Well, those two people who aren't are going to be ripping their sides apart with you. All right, let's get to the topic at hand. The shit show that is America once again. Apparently, a slim majority of our listeners are American. I don't know why, but apparently they are. So you know who you are, people listening. Maybe you don't want us to talk about America. Maybe that's why you listen to us, because you go, I want to learn about other fucked up countries. But we're going to talk about you. First question, throwing it out there. With just a week to go, what does the American election tell us about the state of the American empire at the moment? And that's a broad question. You can make it about the election. You can make it about whatever. What do you think, James?
I think it broadly shows you how fucking terrible it is going in America. I know that your favorite theory, Alex, is that there's going to be a civil war. I don't 100% agree with you, though I would say it's not a complete impossibility. But it is clearly hurtling towards some sort of huge systemic crisis one way or another. And the election is pretty much, is either going to be the catalyst for it or is going to plant even more of the seeds for it.
I personally think this election bears a striking resemblance to the one in that kind of preceded the American Civil War, other than Lincoln was actually a halfway decent politician, whereas Biden is a career neoliberal corporate shill. So there's really not, you know, there's not the type of character who might have been like a Bernie Sanders. If Sanders had got through, and we talked about that in another episode back in April, but if he had got through, you would have been seeing a very kind of Civil War-esque election happening. As to what I think that's going to happen, I think some type of civil war of the nationalist right upon, maybe even with the police attached, I don't know, is going to happen. I don't know exactly when. I will talk more about what we think will happen, but it says a lot about America being basically nearly to that point of fragmentation and civil war. So the empire is dead. I mean, I think it's dead already. We're just now fighting over the carcass. Will.
Man, I'm really glad you like used the word empire there, because I don't know if you saw in the news the other day, but apparently Trump has vowed to keep a manned presence on the moon if he is elected for a second term. So he announced yesterday that he would put a person on the moon, build a space station, and then have it constantly manned. So the American empire is not dead. It's just going galactic. Alex, so wait a minute. I'm just like wanting to like roll back a bit. Alex, are you a Boogaloo boy? Is that like what I'm learning about this?
I mean, probably a left-wing, ironic Boogaloo boy. Well, I suppose you'd have to be if you're left-wing. I don't want it to happen. But I just think it's impossible to prevent. I mean, the election is only a couple of days away. I think some of the pressure, people might be thinking, oh, Trump's just so unelectable at this point. It's not going to end up in a civil war. I think people need to take a historical perspective on this. This is something that's been building probably since the 80s and 90s. Timothy McVeigh blew up the building in Oklahoma back in 95, and he was very much part of that kind of nationalist alt-right thing. It's been there a while. I think it'll come to head. Like James said, I think it'll be smashed by the army, though. But anyway, we're kind of getting off point. So I suppose since we all kind of voiced our opinion, unless Will wants to come back with another kind of more eloquent take on what you think the American empire is doing to itself right now.
No, I think my entire take will just be something like the American empire is now an intergalactic empire, and we all need to listen to Beastie Boys, or like the first 10 seconds of that Beastie Boys song. Like this, like the only good 10 seconds of any Beastie Boys song.
Wait. Isn't there the... Oh, fuck. What's the name of that song? the one that's in all the movies.
Are you thinking of Sabotage?
Yes, Sabotage. That's it. That's a very good song. Don't... Anyway. It's a pop song. Okay, so what we'll go on from here is just an obvious question. Who do you think will win the election in a couple of the days, and why? And you can take it from there, basically. We kind of did this back in April, but back then it was a somewhat different question, but it's kind of much more obvious now. But who do we think is going to win, and why? Silence.
I can go first. I'm going to let James go first, because he normally has like better insights than me as to these things. But I suppose like I still think Trump is going to win. The only thing funnier than Trump winning is Trump not winning. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I just don't see him losing to like Joe Biden. I've noticed on Instagram the past couple of days, especially, that there's been like loads of millennial celebrities trying to get people out to vote. I'm not sure if that will piss people off or not, but apparently there's already been like waves and waves of people voting early. So like the election is going to like be one of the apparently the best turned out election in American politics since 1903. I heard that statistic somewhere. I don't know if it's true. But high turnout goes against Trump, I suppose. But I just don't see him losing to Joe Biden. Like, everyone hates Joe Biden, except Noam Chomsky, which we'll talk about soon, I'm sure.
Oh, that's a low blow.
That was a below the belt, like, and like totally straw man kick. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just like, are you fucking Virgil Texas with a bad mask? You know. Anyway, what do I think is going to happen? I repeat the same thing I said back in April, which is I think because of COVID and because of everything that's happening, I think Trump will lose, but I don't think that will really matter because I think he's going to run again in 4 years and he's going to win then because Biden is too old to be running again. So you're going to have him running against another Democrat, shill, who's been in power for 4 years, and Trump will run again and he'll win again. He'll dominate the party for the 4 years in between because it's a cult now, and that's just the way things are. That's my view anyway. James, the other Will.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to call at the moment. It's too thin. I don't really feel comfortable saying which way it'll go. Just that either outcome is sort of the banter timeline. Because if Trump wins, then, which, you know, wouldn't surprise me, what will happen is much of the same, because I don't think that Trump really has the ability to do a lot of the terrible things that people think that he's going to do, because he doesn't know how to pull the powers, like the mechanisms of powers in the American state. Now, yeah, he will probably, you know, fill certain positions with nutters, but so is Biden going to do that as well? So I don't really see the difference there. It's just like what shade of nutter you're getting. If Biden gets in, then at least we'll get to see Trump like have a complete hissy fit, and there probably will be some sort of like breakout of violence. And what will happen is it'll just entrench the right in their position. And then what will happen in the future, you know, in 4 years' time, Biden won't do anything. He won't change anything. Nothing will get better. In fact, things will probably just slide in the way that they're going anyway. And then I don't think Trump will stick around, but I think that the Republicans will have someone that is more fascist, more coherently ideologically fascist, but is also a much better operator, who, you know, talks well and knows the right people and knows how to present themselves to the liberals. And they'll just not notice how much of a fascist he is, even if he had a toothbrush mustache and was, you know, had his arm cocked at a 50-degree angle. They'll just pass him by because he looks the part. And the Dems just, either way, they're not going to learn anything from the past 4 years and before that.
Just to say, I think you're right to some degree there. Whoever they pick next, as long as they're not vulgar like Trump, the Democrats and liberals in general will ignore them. It doesn't matter what they believe economically or, you know, even socially, as long as they're polite, which is a big the only bugbear of centrist anyway. Will?
Yeah, I think like the thing about sneaking through an extremely right-wing person who has all these like overt, I was going to say overt dog whistles, but they're not dog whistles if they're overt, it's really interesting. I don't know if you guys saw that news story about Sky putting out this TV show about like woodworkers or something, and the guy Lee Mack, the non-entity who presents this TV show, was interviewing this dude who had like swastikas tattooed all over him and like loads of neo-Nazi white supremacist tattoos all over his face. And Sky like put this program out. Apparently no one bothered to check what the tattoos were. And then when someone complained about this dude being like littered with white supremacist tattoos, Sky responded by saying, oh no, we've asked him. There is nothing to do with like white supremacy stuff. He's tattooed onto him the year his dad was born, which happens to be 1988. This guy just had like 88 tattooed on his cheek. So like apparently a few days after, the guy's dad contacted a newspaper and said, I'm not dead. I don't know why he's got 88 tattooed on his cheek, because it's not the year I died. I'm still alive. So like Sky like had this tattoo covered dude with like he had homegrown tattooed over his face as well, and like loads of like neo-Nazi symbols all over his face and like Viking runes all over him and all that kind of stuff. And just like it totally passed, like almost no one noticed this. So it would not surprise me if like an absolute far right ideologue managed to get into a position of power, if like that's how obvious you can be and just walk by completely unimpeded. And like they're not even in politics, right? So God knows.
But like in a weird way, you even see it with people like John Lydon. John Lydon was photographed, though to some extent, how much he was he wearing a t-shirt saying Make America Great Again to piss people off? I don't know. I mean, he did a buttered advert, which really pissed people off. So maybe it's just part of the punk ethic. I don't know. But the Gallagher brothers, who are notorious for their knowledge in virology, have both kind of gone, oh, no, you're wearing, yeah, whatever. Insert Mancunian accent. you know, so I don't know. I think there is that element of those people you kind of notice to be crazy, but it's kind of the elite guy who's going to be well-spoken. He's going to, and it's going to be a he, of course, unless you're Marine Le Pen. That's unfair. It could be a woman, I suppose, who slips in there because they know what dog whistles not to blow. James.
But, I mean, either way, what you're saying is a break in the American election constitution, effectively, because it was set up in a way to make sure that the two parties were never going to be that different. And they're, you know, they've sort of moved here and there over a couple, like 100 years or so, but all you're seeing is that the Republicans are drifting further and further to the right, and the Democrats are just drifting further to the right with them. But you're starting to see how far that takes you, because then no one has anyone to vote for. So you've just got two, you know, far right parties, one that has someone like Ryan Reynolds saying, ah, they're not that bad, which apparently, you know, makes it fine. And so, like, maybe not the next election, but the election after that, what is it going to look like? You're just going to have this like quagmire that's going to be unable to unpick. And it's a two-state, you know, system, and that's the way it's designed. So its inherent contradictions are starting to catch up with it.
Yeah, but I think if you'd gone back to the 1850s and 60s, you would have said the same thing about the way the Democratic Party was going back then, because they were the pro-slavery, pro kind of Southern aristocracy. And the election happens, and Lincoln gets in with not a majority. There was actually four parties running at the time that split up the vote, and he only got in like 20% of the vote. And when he got in, everything kicked off, and the war kind of made possible the changes. So I think the chance of there being some type of conflict or some type of, I use the word conflict more than war, and that leading to some type of change is possible. James wants to respond to that.
Yeah, I just think it's also going to be interesting because the American system is difficult for me to remember, because I had like, there was like 1 year where I basically understood it, and then like a year later, I completely forgotten how it works. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, who wins and what the breakdown is between the popular vote and whatever the other vote is called, the constitutional vote or whatever.
The Electoral College.
The Electoral College, that's it. So if, like, say, it might be interesting to see if Trump loses in one but wins in the other, you know? I think that's, like, quite a possible scenario as well.
No, yeah, that happened last time as well. I mean, that kind of Chomsky, that is high compliment, James. James' point there a couple of minutes ago, it leads us somewhat on to the next question. So in a recent podcast debate, if you want to call it a debate, Brenna Joy Gray, Virgil Texas, and talked to Noam Chomsky on their podcast, Bad Faith. They basically debated the liberal talking point that lefties have to vote for Biden over Trump for fear he will become a fascist dictator. Chomsky agreed basically with this point, though he did say that, you know, the elections are the least important thing you do as a citizen, as a person, and as an activist, and you shouldn't take it. Basically, he was saying to them, don't fall for the establishment viewpoint that this is the most and the most important thing and the only thing as an activist you should do. Brenna Joy and Virgil did not agree with this. So basically, it's the eternal debate of voting third party, not voting at all, or as Brenna Joy Gray would like to, basically holding their vote as a means to get concessions from the Dems for universal health care, etc. So what do we each? How do each of us stand on, I suppose, on the debate, but maybe if, well, not debate, this yelling match, or about the general idea of those two ideas. Will?
I think I'm probably, like, a bit conflicted about the terms of the debate. So the idea, I think, was that if you don't vote, that's a vote for Trump. But similarly, if you don't vote, that's also not a vote for Biden, right? So, like, I didn't quite understand. Was the presupposition that if you're taking away a vote for Biden, that's, like, a positive point for Trump? I thought that was, like, probably not right, but, like, maybe it is, I suppose. If, like, the presupposition is that if you were going to vote at all, you would vote for Biden, and then that makes sense. I initially was really hostile to this kind of view that you should vote for Biden, and then I, being a nerd, was on YouTube a lot this week, and two people I respect enormously, namely ContraPoints, real name Natalie Wynn, and a guy called Vosh, who doesn't look entirely dissimilar to James, actually, were arguing that you should vote for Biden. And this surprised me, because ContraPoints is, like, really articulate, really intelligent, normally super insightful as to what the argument is. But I felt that she really strawmanned the view that you shouldn't vote for, sorry, you just that you shouldn't vote. I thought, like, she held a really strong straw man up against this, and I thought that was kind of rubbish of her. Brenna Joy Gray says something kind of interesting to Chomsky, which was, if she is a woman of color, which she is, then why on earth should she vote for, like, Joe Biden when he's, like, put through a bunch of racist policies? And Chomsky's argument was, this is going to be essentially an election around harm mitigation. So you have a moral reason to vote for Joe Biden because it's less harmful than it would be. A Joe Biden presidency would be less harmful than a Trump presidency. I'm not sure if that's true. So it's definitely true in the short term, right? None of us will probably disagree with that it's true in the short term. But I'm not sure if it's true in the long term. And I suppose I wanted to hear what you guys had to say about it, because I'm really conflicted.
I don't think Trump, as James said earlier, I don't think Trump has it in him or has the ability to become a fascist dictator. I think in the same way that the whole Russiagate thing was used to clobber him with, I never really bought that. I mean, I could be wrong, but it just, none of what he is or his supporters are on the same level of what Germany and Weimar Republic is, or what maybe closer, but even that not really very close to what Mussolini was, or for that matter, with the whole Franco thing experience. So yeah, I never really bought that. I felt that the I watched the ContraPoints video. I also felt that I felt that it was bashing very much like kind of, you know, bashing people over the head, left us over the head with this point. And I think Chomsky went in with the same idea. He's like, I'm just going to keep repeating this over and over and over again until they get it into their heads. And in fairness, they didn't really seem to get into their heads what he was saying, because they kept asking the same question in different ways and he kept responding in the same way. So I don't think it was a debate. I felt it was two viewpoints that just were not going to align. And the fact that Virgil, at the beginning of the debate, basically said that anarchists are the type of people who come up with shit like this, I felt that was like, well done, community, you know, left kind of alliances building. I felt there was a level of arrogance there that I felt really unappealing about that. But then again, he's a hipster from New York, so what do you expect? I found Brianna Joy Gray made really good points, and I absolutely agree. If I was in the same position, I would be very dubious about voting for Biden. Because I'm like, well, is it going to be that significantly better? I mean, I don't know. And, you know, and I don't live in the States, so I don't have a vote, so this is kind of mitigated somewhat. I may be rambling a bit, but what I'm trying to say is I feel that not voting for Biden is unlikely to do very much more harm than if you voted. If Trump got in as a result of that, I don't know if it's going to be that much worse. I mean, certainly it would be annoying for liberals. He's going to be a vulgar prick. But I don't know. It's hard for me to see that there's going to be much of a difference one way or the other. That's just my viewpoint. But I don't live there, so maybe I'm wrong. James?
Yeah, it does seem like a sort of logical error to say like, oh yeah, well, if you vote Biden, he's not great and he's not going to do anything that we want, but at least we'll be able to have some structure in there for us to listen to him. But the Democrats have never done that at any point, so why would they suddenly start now? And you're right, it is very kind of difficult, because it's like Chomsky's like, you know, it's so important to me, anyone, I know you, Alex, like our ideological framework that we've built upon. And so it's very much a case of like, when Chomsky speaks, like, you certainly fucking listen, even if you don't agree with him, because he's like your granddad. You know, he's this old man that is very wise, and maybe has a bit like a few outdated ideas. You don't agree with him on everything, but you know, he's given us so much to work from. But if he was saying the same, like, what's going to happen in, say, you know, 3 years, 4 years in, say, the UK, we're going to have the same argument where they're going to be like, oh, well, you know, like, you know, Starmer isn't great, but we better vote for him rather than, you know, make sure everyone votes for him to make sure that Johnson doesn't get in again. It's like, well, no, there's literally no point for voting for Starmer, because he's proven already that he's not going to listen to the left or anything that is resembling a push to make the world a slightly nicer place. So what's the point? And I just feel that would be the exact same thing with Biden. And, you know, Chomsky made a few mistakes where he was like, you know, someone's telling him like, oh yeah, well, you know, it isn't just 10 minutes, because there is like huge amount of voter suppression going on in America by the Democrats and the Republicans at the same time at the moment. So to then just like off that and be like, oh no, it's only 10 minutes out of your day, it's like, well, it isn't actually. It's going to be way more complicated for that if you are someone that's working in Burger King.
I do think you made a good point, though, about elections being the least important thing you do, and that people like Brianna Joy Gray and Virgil Texas and a lot of people on YouTube and on podcasts have become hyper-focused on it. And I don't think, and he's right, that's not how change works. Change has never come through political parties. It's always come through outside extra-parliamentary activism. He is absolutely right in that. There's nothing I can think of in the history of Britain or Ireland or beyond them in the States that where you got change through the parliament. What happened with the New Deal back in the 30s was there was a huge socialist communist movement that had to be crushed, that was crushed violently by the state. But those feelings were still there, and people were highly politicized and highly unionized. You have the Depression, then you have FDR. But FDR was moved left. The Democratic Party was moved left because in his own words, he knew there would be a revolution if he didn't do something about it. So I feel he is right about that. And I do think they are too focused on this election as being, okay, well, what we need is a People's Party. Well, that's why where the Labour Party came from. Labour Party in Britain started as with that idea. Oh, we just need the right people in Parliament. But that's not how power works, and that's not how capital works. So I think they're focusing too much on that. And he did make a really good point about that, which they never addressed. But they wouldn't, because they're not anarchists. They don't see things that way. They just think you need the right people in office, which we don't think. Will.
So, like, I think I want to be kind of sensitive to Chomsky's, like, argument for, like, the reasons James gave. He is, after all, our God and master. But I was kind of thinking about this. Like, so I think you're lying that change is never really achieved via parliamentary or governmental activity. But then if that's true, and that I think you're right, that was his point. If that's true, then why should we care about voting for Biden anyway?
Are you asking me, or is that a rhetorical question?
I suppose both. If his argument is something like, voting is the least important thing you can do because change isn't affected that way, then why should we give a shit if Trump or Biden get in? Like, what difference does it make? If, like, change is not going to happen, then why does it matter?
No, he wasn't saying change doesn't happen at all through any type of interconnective tissue with government. He was saying you need somebody in office he said take a chance to have somebody in office that you can try and push. He says you're not going to be able to push Trump in any direction because Trump's fucking insane. Whereas with Biden, he's thinking, well, A, he might not be in office for very long. There is rumors he's going to stand down halfway through because he's just too fucking old. In which case, can you push Kamala Harris or someone like her? Maybe. And I think that's his point of view, which is that you might be, and he even said at one point, he says, you might be able to move them. If you can't, then we're lost. But at least we tried in the hope that you use extra parliamentary activity to push government. But he said you can't do that with Trump. And that's his point. As you said, harm mitigation. So I don't know if that answers your question.
I suppose, like, maybe a wee bit. I suppose when you mean, like, Biden's going to stand down halfway through, you mean he's going to fall down halfway through, presumably have a heart attack or a stroke or something.
No, he's going to fall down on top of a young woman.
No, please, no. But just, I don't know, it just strikes me that either Parliament is a vehicle for change and can facilitate change, which is, like, maybe a more charitable interpretation of what you said, or it's not. In either case, it seems to me almost irrelevant then, if that's going to be his line. If, like, at best, the line is going to be something like Biden might facilitate or provide the grounds for change on an extra parliamentary level. I just don't see that as being true. Like, if anyone is going to be hyper status quo, it's going to be Biden, more than Trump, I'd say. Biden is going to want to protect the status quo more. So I don't know why anyone would think having a Joe Biden presidency is going to facilitate extra parliamentary change in a way that Trump won't. But yeah, maybe I'm being cynical and pessimistic.
Maybe. James?
No, I don't quite agree with that. I mean, I think one of the problems that Chomsky has, personally, the way that he frames things, I would say, is it's like he has the view of how to fight a war, but he never really puts it in those terms. But and maybe he does that on purpose to try and make it more appealing to a mass audience. But I think it's very much a case of, like, this election, the way that he's seeing it, is you're deciding who your next enemy is. And Biden is weaker than Trump. And so it will be easier to push things through for him because Biden doesn't have a paramilitary grip behind him. He doesn't have, you know, he'll have the police to some extent, but they won't go to bat in the same way. He just doesn't have that much interest. And so he is a weaker enemy. He's easier to take on. So from that standpoint, I would say, if I was living in America, I would probably vote for Biden, but just under the pretense of, like, I would rather, you know, take him on in the ring than take Trump on.
I mean, one last point, I suppose, about that talked about debate in quotation marks is I found that the thing I really was getting annoyed about the most, other than Virgil Texas being a cunt, was that Chomsky kept bringing up climate change. I know he takes it seriously, as everyone should, but I felt that he was being very, I don't think he was being honest with how people view that, the states. And he was saying, oh, well, you know, your job as an activist is to make people aware, whether they have material current concerns or not, that this is a doomsday event coming down the road and everything has to take a back seat. But that's not how people work. And I think, in fairness, Brianna Joy Gray brought that up. That's not how people work. Like, if you're living in a shit, like, what they call them, the projects, if you're an African-American living project, you're not even fucking thinking about it. You don't have a life. He even said it. You don't have a lifespan long enough to be worrying about these things. You're worrying about literally the here and now. And it's, and she did bring up, well, it's Biden's job to do that. And he hasn't done that because, of course, he's an establishment neoliberal corporate shill. So obviously, so yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, the obvious point is that Trump will lose the election. Biden won't win it. That's obvious enough. And my worry is that, and Trump didn't bring this up. He, you know, I think Brianna Joy said, well, what happens in 4 years? And goes, that's not important. Just have to get rid of him. So I don't know. I find it was almost as pointless as the Jordan Peterson Slavoj Žižek debate of several years ago, with less humor involved, because at least Žižek's snuffling and snorting and sneezing was funny. And there was one moment where he brought up the fact that there is no fucking such, there's no such thing as postmodern anarchism, postmodern Marxism in the academia. Anyway, so I suppose the other question that comes out of that, which is an important one, is can a left-wing party splinter off from the Democratic Party going forward and achieve any real success? Because there's a lot of, there's a bit of a groundswell amongst the left in America, sort of, to have like a people's party, the equivalent of the Labour Party, basically, to take that vote from the young, basically younger people living in cities and who are on the internet. Is there any chance if they were to do that going forward that, you know, take the Bernie Sanders vote effectively, that it would have any success, even if it was just running locally, not so much on the international statewide level, a federal level, but a state level as in individual states. James?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. I think it could be a goer. I know in my hearts of hearts that they'll try it and they'll fuck it up, because Americans are unique in their ability to, they're not unique, because everyone on the left does this, to actually just look at the mistakes that other people have made and learn from them. But America is kind of different to Europe in the sense that it's never had a Labour Party. It's never had a party that grew up from trying to represent the Labour movement. And so they haven't even had the chance to have that taken away from them, to have the Et tu, Brutus movement. There you go, that's Jacob Rees-Mogg and me coming out there. Down with the people with the Caesar references.
It's actually Et tu, Brute.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, now I'm getting lectured on my Latin by an Irishman, by no less. What was my point? Yeah, so, yeah, it's a goer because, you know, now there is the funding models to go forward with. And as good as the, you know, say like, you know, we heard of problems with Occupy Wall Street and Black Lives Matter has its issues because they're media campaigns rather than like structural campaigns, or, you know, they only sort of exist in a social media sphere. But if that starts succeeding to, you know, people setting up new parties that have a federal link between them all, they're all, you know, getting funded in the same way that, you know, we've helped with the bail funds that are going on in America. It wouldn't cost all that much if it would be the same amount that it would be, you know, that people were supporting Bernie with, et cetera, et cetera. And if they were smart about it, then yeah, actually, maybe not in the next election, but the election after that, they would have some sort of coherent force to smash the Democratic's hegemony with, because they wouldn't be relying on the press to help them out.
Sorry, yeah. I was just trying to like make sense of this, and I suppose like I really like James's point about how the American left has never had like a workers' party to mobilize behind, or a political party that's arisen out of a workers' movement. I never really thought about it like that before, but I like that point. Thinking about analogous narratives that have happened in the British media when Jeremy Corbyn lost the UK election last year, and there was like I suppose, some talk about the UK Labour Party splitting between the Momentum Left and the UK Labour Party with Keir Starmer. And that never happened because you had a bunch of people like Owen Jones saying like these absurd platitudes like, now is not the time to leave, now is the time to organise. And if I hear that phrase one more time, I'm going to cry. I assume that that may just happen in the American Democratic Party as well. But yeah, I suppose like the point that that wasn't really a workers' party might be maybe more historically relevant than I gave it credence to initially. I was going to like correct both your Latin and say it's actually tu quoque bruti. Like et tu bruti, I think is technically Greek, but again, that would make me the worst person in the world. And who the fuck cares about Latin or Greek? So I'm just going to shut up.
I took Latin advice from this podcast.
Exactly, yeah. Ancient Greek, on the other hand. Well, isn't Boris Johnson fluent? Anyway, we won't go down the Boris Johnson Latin route. I should say that from the 30s until the 60s, generally speaking, the Democratic Party was considered a workers' quote party, or it was a coalition anyway of a section of the elite and a section of the white working class, because it was very much the white working class who defect once Johnson passes civil rights bills, because obviously that granted equal rights for African Americans, who the white working class apparently did not want them to have that. But yeah, I mean, there was the New Deal kind of ethos, from huge building projects to jobs to social security, all these things that were brought in up until the Great Society in the late 60s, which was already planning a form of UBI. We talked about this in another episode. So, I mean, to say that they didn't have some type of role is wrong, but it's true to say that any attempt to found a separate party or separate movement from one of the two big parties has always been crushed, and the duopoly remains. And to some extent, you know, the Republicans play and the Democrats play at being enemies, but they know how things work. They need to maintain, you know, their broad churches as best they can. Hence why Trump was reviled by most of the Republicans until he actually got the nomination. Then they all lined up behind him, you know, as one. Anyway, James.
Yeah, but again, it's like the old Labour thing. The reason the Democrats did that was not through goodwill of their own volition. It was because they were scared that they would have to give up their nice houses and pay a little bit more tax. They didn't do it out of benevolence. And the Democrats, much like the Labour Party, have increasingly been more of the party of big business, in the way that their, you know, their top brass has been captured in that way. So it's that, like, you're looking back at the things that they've achieved, but it's basically like nothing of their own volition.
No, I agree. And in a rather odd coincidence, when Chomsky was in Dublin back in 2009, I think it was, or 2010, he was speaking in ECD, and I went to hear him, and I actually asked him the very question, why was there no Labour Party in the US? And he said basically it's because it was stamped out. The people were still there and their beliefs were still there. The organizations had been shut down. And that's, as you said, why the Democrats turned that direction, because they were afraid of them. So yeah, I mean, we don't really have an answer. Yeah, so we don't really have an answer to that. It might be successful, I suppose. It might not. It doesn't really behoove us as anarchists to kind of speculate on that. I suppose a better question is, what is the best tactic for the left going forward from this if Biden wins? And the same question if Trump wins. And there's probably two different answers there. If you're in the left, if, again, hypothetically, you're an American, you're in the left, what would you, if Biden wins, what would you suggest? Chomsky suggests continue the demonstrations and activism going and try and push him leftward. He says that Trump won't listen either way if he wins. So, Will, what do you think?
So I think for the left, it's actually not good if either win. I mean, for obvious reasons, but also because Biden has been pushed really hard to the right with this law and order narrative that Trump is kind of trying to fashion. So if Biden gets in and like Antifa in America, I don't know, do whatever, Biden is going to have to be seen to be taking a really strong stand against them, because that's what Trump has managed to successfully make them into, like a quasi-terrorist group. So I suppose like if you're on the left in America and you're like an activist on the left in America, you're going to be forced further underground. So like, I suppose I'd be pretty pessimistic about it. I get, man, why am I so depressed this week? Sorry, Alex.
Wrong person to apologize for. I'm plenty depressed on my own, right? And the king of depression, James, what do you think?
I don't think that's quite right, because I think a pile of dead bodies is a problem for Biden. And I think he would struggle to spin that, where for Trump, that wouldn't fucking matter either way. The bodies can pile up for Trump, and that's not going to affect his base. Where if Biden's seen with, you know, blood on his hands, that is Americans, obviously, he's going to start two or three foreign wars, if overtly, at least covertly. But if you seem to see, you know, getting American blood on his hands, that will be impolite. And then, you know, someone in the Washington Post might do a very soft focus rebuttal. And that would probably, you know, that would actually cause him maybe 20 minutes of upset. And that would then, you know, effectively be a hate crime. So from that standpoint, I don't think it is as clear cut as well as saying.
I mean, sure, but like, I'm not saying that Biden's going to kill Antifa people, right? Like, that would be, I think that would probably be disproportionate. But I do think that he would, not hesitate to label them a domestic terrorist group. We've already kind of seen moves like that in the UK, like labeling various political groups domestic terrorists, like Plan C, the IWW, all these types of people were like on a big watch list of people that MI5 now had greater powers to investigate and spy on. I do not doubt that Biden would, well, maybe I'm again being disproportionately pessimistic. Also, if James is the king of depression and pessimism, does that make me like not even the best at depression and pessimism? So like, am I like a pro pessimist? Like, I don't know whether to be more depressed about this or not.
You're like a Mark. You're like a Marquis of depression.
The Marquis of depression. Yeah, I suppose like my point is something like Biden is going to have to try and placate a certain demographic of American people who've successfully bought the narrative, or unsuccessfully, depending on your perspective, that Antifa are a terrorist group, or Antifa, as Americans call them, are a terrorist group. And he's going to have to be seen to be taking a strong stand against them. And I'm not suggesting that he's going to order the police to go kicking in doors and cracking skulls, but I do think he will criminalize those groups, or will like marginalize them in such a way as to make them, functionally speaking, criminalized.
I mean, I think the basic of the question is has the same answer from my perspective, which is the left has to keep doing what it's doing. I mean, I think that some of it is generational. Which is, the older I get, the more I read, the more I believe this, like, people form their opinions, or their opinions are formed anyway. At a certain point, it can come later or earlier in people's lives, and it's very, very hard to shift them from those positions. A lot of people were shifted to basically Rupert Murdoch's position, otherwise known as Logan Roy, because, yes, I am watching that series. But basically, once you have them, for a lot of people anyway, once you have them beholden to this kind of belief system, you keep piling it on, as Fox News has, or over in Britain, Paul Dacre and various Rupert Murdoch related groups keep piling it on. You can only really convince new people. And I think what's happened since the advent of, you know, social media and kind of alternative news online is that you have people broadly under the age of maybe 40, maybe 45. I think that's what Dan said last time. In regards to England, who have a different point of view. And I think you can work with that. But unfortunately, I don't really think there's much to be saved for people above a certain age. I mean, they might change their minds, but I just don't see it if they're watching TV and they're getting their news, their toxic news piped into their ear. So for the left, it's to try and build on that and try and get more and more people in, you know, getting the news, getting their information through non-Rupert Murdoch, right-wing news agencies. And unfortunately, that means taking a much longer-term view of what can be achieved. I don't think there's really much hope that for the next 10 years you're going to see very much change at all, any positive change. But we can use that time to build. And in the end, when the time comes that there's just more people who think our way than think Trump's way or think Biden's way, you might have some change. It's probably too late to save us from living under the water, though, which is whole Chomsky's point, anyway. That was my take, anyway. James?
Yeah, I think we've got a big problem on our way, and the left really fucked it We like absolutely shagged the dog Ian Austin style on this one, because we basically let the right blame immigration and that for all the ills in society when there was abundant amount of resources. And pretty soon that's not going to be the case. And so if we feel that it's bad now, when there's, you know, enough oil coming out of the ground and there's enough water for people to, you know, buy flavored water that costs like 20 quid, you know, in the next 10, 15 years, when things are starting to get a little bit spicy, how bad is that rhetoric going to be? Because they're not going to have a point, but they're going to have at least the framework to be able to build from it, because it's already been there for so long. If I'm being honest, I don't think... The point is we're going to have to try, but I don't think we're going to succeed. We're pretty much going to see in our lifetime the end of 24-hour electricity, the, you know, the end of being able to get a, you know, your nice treats from China shipped over in a couple of days. It, like, people don't really seem to understand how quickly society can completely degrade. You know, if you were born in the right time, I'm sure I've said this before, but it's worth repeating. If you were born in the right time in England, you would have seen the going from city life under the Romans to living, you know, in a semi-nomadic pastoral life within 30 years. That's your lifetime. I can easily see us going that way, because I think where Chomsky's wrong is saying, like, oh, Trump is dedicated to, you know, oblivion, where I would put Biden exactly into the same framework, because it's not nearly enough. And we've, you know, people are saying, like, oh, we've only got 10 years left of climate. It was like, yeah, but it's going to take us about 30 years to get people to understand that. So we've basically, like, we're just counting down the clock as it goes.
I blame this on the people who didn't watch Fern Gully back in the 1990s. If anyone remembers Fern Gully and the powerful effect Tim Curry as a noxious cloud had, God bless Tim Curry. I suppose that kind of feeds into our last question. I suppose just a little soundbite for this one. Will the American Empire survive the next 10 years, maybe even less? I don't know, is my answer. I would be very surprised if there wasn't some type of conflict. And I think it'll be a slower death than the next 10 years. But I think if we think back to what the world was like when Obama became president, and we look to what it's like now, America has had a kind of precipitous fall. And I think that's just going to keep going. So whether it's 10 years or 20 years, doesn't really matter. America is mortally wounded. The empire is mortally wounded. And it's just a bit like a bit Britain after World War II. It's just starting to wind down. So I don't know when it'll be, but in 10 years, will be pretty fucking obvious how much longer it's got. James?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be, you know, it'll still be in its death throes in 10 years. But I don't think anything's going to come up and replace it. I think we've potentially seen the end of the idea of superpowers for the foreseeable future, because the resources just do not exist to be able to get an empire on that scale again.
Yeah, I mean, like, I suppose, like, I don't see much changing, really. Maybe, like, the superpower thing James said is right. I'm not going to try and say China in the way that Donald Trump says China, but, like, maybe I really don't see them kind of taking over the way America has either. Similarly, America's decline is, like, social, maybe not as economically obvious, but certainly socially obvious. So, yeah, I'm the same as yourself, Alex. I just don't know.
Well, sorry, Alex. It's important to note that the way that America is going to fall is going to pretty much fuck everyone else, though, because their shadow economy is effectively propping up everywhere else. Like, for example, Ireland.
That's always a lovely note to end on. We're going to go back into the kind of Catholic, well, not Catholic theocracy, because we'll have to come up with a new religion. I think paganism. Let's go back on paganism. The Children of Danu cult to be available in the next Assassin's Creed Valhalla. We'll start worshipping them again. Why not?
This podcast has been brought to you by Vikings Valhalla.
Assassin's Creed Vikings Valhalla. Two. Yeah, so I suppose in a rather depressing way for our American visitors, listeners, That's our view, and it's not a good one. And it's not
yeah. If you're American, we're laughing at you right now. You are so fucked.
There's that thing from Simpsons where the guy is like pointing, like someone turns on the TV and goes, "Ah, you stupid motherfucker." You remember that from Simpsons? It's people in America. You remember Simpsons? Anyway, we'll finish up next week. I don't know. We'll know next week, obviously, who won the election. I don't think we need to retread the ground unless something very dramatic happens over the next week.
I mean, the only thing I ever like desperately want to bring up is Hegel. And I like resist the urge each and every week. But man, if you want to do like a Hegel episode, that'd be really great. I would just like fanboy at all of you about how much I love Hegel. Be really embarrassing for me, but also for you guys.
Well, we clearly have to do an episode on Nietzsche because you hate Nietzsche.
My PhD was on Nietzsche and Hegel. So my PhD, for those of you who want to read it, and sweet Christ, no one does, is called something like Grounding and Generating the Ethical : because all PhDs have to have a : now. Hegel and Nietzsche on Normativity. But yeah, I just really fucking hate Nietzsche. I don't hate Nietzsche. I think he's an arsehole. But I think his model of agency is pretty solid. But yeah, dude's a dickhead. He's just a rabid elitist.
Grounding the colon, eh?
Yeah, grounding the colon.
That's James. That's James's PhD. Grounding the colon. A square go in the port of Leith. which you know, there's a lot of that going on. Anyway, we'll say goodbye. It's goodbye from me, Alex. Bye bye. Bye bye from James.
Adios.
And of course, bye bye from Will. Depressed pants.
The Marquis of Depression. Goodbye, all.
Bye-bye.